Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host, a late sub, Mr. Tony Anderson, and I am joined by Kilmarnock's finest. It's Mr. Craig Anderson.
How are you doing?
I'm grand, Craig. And our resident Rangers fan, it's Ewan, professional podcaster Taylor. How are we, Ewan?
I'm fine. Felt like you were going to call me a sectarian slur there, and you managed to stop yourself. So well done.
I was borderline, and then I thought maybe not on the main show.
You got to pay for that.
The main show, but we have a lot to get stuck into. But you know what? I'm gonna blow our own trumpet straight away. I was gonna do this at the end, but I thought we've got a bloody live show coming out, lads, and I want to get this front and center. And it's a live show I don't think we've quite done before. I think every single person's coming apart from Amy. Is that right? Unfortunately, Amy's having to, I think she's going up to Inverness to work, isn't she?
She's an actual professional that has to work in football. And there is football.
She call herself a professional podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Sadly, Amy can't make it. And I think we'll Craig will be there in body, if not in spirit, because spiritually you'll be in Inverness as well. I was
annoyed that because I think Inverness Saturday I was planning to go up, but I couldn't really go. I'm working on the Friday, which I couldn't really have got up in time. I will be participating, but I will be participating hopefully at the start before our game gets to meet you. And then I will be one eye on the show and one eye on Kilmarnock's 2-0 defeat.
So you can pet. So if you see Craig Anderson moving into the crowd after doing his segments on the show with his phone trying to watch the game, annoy him. Stop him from doing that.
But it's probably doing me a favour.
For our eagled-eared listeners, I mean, what do you say for that? You obviously get eagled eye. What do you say?
Bat-eared.
Our bat-eared listeners, you'll notice that we're talking about the evening being when Inverness are playing Kilmarnock in the Scottish Cup. They'll know that that means the game is the live show is going to be on the 10th of March. And this is it for us, lads. We're going to be at bloody Hampden Park. Hampden, talking about football in front of a crowd for a really great cause. It's for Children First, who I work closely with in my personal life, and I know how great a lot of the work they do, and all the proceeds will be going to that. All the profit will be going to Children First, and we would absolutely love it if you come along. It's going to be £25 for the ticket, but that'll include a good couple hours of us all up on stage. We're going to have special guests who have been confirmed. I'm not allowed to say what they are though, but I know that they've been confirmed and they are ready. And it'll also be a pie and a pint. So I think that's all pretty reasonable for this time. And as I said, you'll get to meet all your Terrace podcast favourites if you're the kind of person who has favourites from from our clan, something I'll never get used to when people say that to me in person. But we do. But we would love it if you could come along and support Children First, and I'm sure we'll all have a right good laugh. But talking of a good laugh, Sunday, midday, Motherwell Football Club at home, defeating Heart of Midlothian Football Club quite easily and quite convincingly, 2-0. Craig Anderson, I am sure you watched it. Were you surprised or were you expecting a bit of a shock in this game?
I wasn't too surprised, to be honest. I think Hearts have still been struggling a bit away from home this season. Like, it's been... Last season was a bit of an anomaly because I think they did pretty well away from home last season, but they played, it was very similar in fact, they played us at Rugby Park in about October and we went 2-0 up, but the difference was Motherwell didn't immediately shit the bed and concede a terrible goal like seconds after scoring and they managed to hold on and yeah, Hearts, we gave Hearts something to bite onto and that got them back in the game, but they were equally as bad up until that point. Yesterday, Hearts just didn't turn up. Maybe the first 15 minutes they were probably just marginally the better team, but Motherwell just got into it. And this Hearts team, which is unusual for Hearts, just look like they struggle with when it's kind of up and at them. Which is usually, you know, it's usually what they do to teams. It used to be when you went to Tynecastle, it didn't matter if you were good, bad, or indifferent, they were going to do that to you. But that was very much what Motherwell did, and I was hugely impressed with Motherwell. And it's two other teams in the relegation battle that we'll talk about couldn't do, which was sign a striker who's going to not a brilliant signing as such, but a striker who's going to be contributing all the time. And Obika, I thought, was fantastic in the game. Thought he made a big difference to Motherwell compared to when I've seen them before. And what he did was allow Van Veen to do what he's good at rather than spend his time fighting with the defenders. Obika was doing that and Van Veen was just picking up all that space, and Hearts did not have a single idea how to deal with them. There were some quite woeful individual performances on the Hearts side of things, but to be honest, they were just outfought, to be honest, by Motherwell. And there'll be twists and turns again. Motherwell will lose a lot of games again, but that's two massive results in a week from a team that I don't think anyone could ever be called doomed in this relegation battle, but they were the ones who were looking like they were on the slide, because every other team down there had been picking up points, whereas Motherwell were just kind of consistently losing. But they've had their turn to win a couple of games, and it gives them a massive chance. It makes them favourites not to go down again, but it doesn't certainly take them out of it. But they've got two big games coming up. They're at Rugby Park on Saturday, and then up in Dingwall. Obviously, if they won both of those, they would be all but safe. If they even won one of them, they're looking very good. So it's a massive kind of couple of weeks coming up.
The impressive thing, Ewan, is because they look like they might be about to make the same decision they made with Hamill right away with Kettlewell, even though there is maybe a slight difference, because the level of these wins is really impressive to beat St Mirren and Hearts too. Well, obviously Hearts being quite considered the third best team in the country, and St Mirren obviously comfortably in the top six this season. They're really, really impressive victories, and they were both quite different.
Yeah, I suppose the only caveat would be they're both at home, so we will see.
But that was bad
for
Motherwell beforehand.
Yeah, well, indeed, that's true, that's true. But I suppose we'll see how they get on at Rugby Park. I would suggest Kilmarnock will win that because it's at Rugby Park. But we'll see. I don't think there should be any rush to appoint Kettlewell. I think I would probably give it to the weekend. And if they do get a result at Rugby Park, you could maybe then say, okay, you know, give it Kettlewell till the end of the season type situation. I don't think there's any need to, I mean, he's a Motherwell employee anyway, just let it run till the end of the season. And then at least you've got, you can maybe make all going well, you can make a sort of long-term managerial appointment when there's less pressure in the summer, rather than sort of, I mean, the fact that Ian Holloway's even been interviewed for it suggests that they're scraping the barrel somewhat in terms of who's available to take it right now. It doesn't seem to be any, I mean, that it would seem madness to bring in someone like that when things are going relatively well under Kettlewell as it stands. So I think let it ride. If Kettlewell loses the next two games, then maybe you do think you need to do something a bit weird, like appoint, you know, an outside. Appoint Holloway, I think, would just be a stupid decision whenever you did it. But you'd do something.
I love him in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, a change of unit, your opinion on getting Holloway, and it could hugely change.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just we need to just do something weird here. Let's get an English weirdo in to be funny with the press. I think, but that might, you know, they might need a jolt again. They've obviously had a jolt by Hamill getting sacked. It was sort of seems a bit daft that they left it as long as they did with Hamill. But yeah, I wouldn't be rushing to give Kettlewell, you know, the keys to Defer Park right now. I just don't see the need.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it does, the paper talk, of course, but it does sound like he has been offered the job, and I find that a bit, I'm not really understanding what is the rush. It doesn't even look like Kettlewell's absolutely certain about wanting to take it. He seems that the vibe I'm getting is that he's quite happy to let it roll out a bit and see what happens. Craig, I mean, did you see any, what huge changes did you think he made in that game that you watched there? What were the differences between sort of him and Hamill?
Well, it looked like attitude, to be honest, as much as tactics. Like, I think Kettlewell got the, I think he did all right at Ross County as manager.
Yeah.
I think what you said with him, it was nothing better than all right. And I think it was when he delved into the transfer window, it maybe started to go a wee bit awry, and he obviously had that weird situation where he was with Ferguson at first, and that was all a bit odd. But I wonder if that's that you said about his reluctance. I wonder if the fact he obviously had a cushy job beforehand at Ross County, as far as I'm aware, and then obviously that's what happens so often. You get propelled into the big boy seat, and then they don't just say, oh, "Okay, well, you're done here. Let's go back to the old job." It's like you're out of work. I quite like him. I feel like he comes across pretty well. I feel like he would be a good person. I imagine the players would like him. And so I think in this short term, probably just that. I'm not that I'm saying I'm sure the players liked Hamill as well, because he comes across the same. But Kettlewell probably is a bit more astute. He's had that managerial experience. He's obviously won the championship. He's not done nothing in his career, even as a manager. I thought it was just a lot of kind of wee tweaks. He obviously brought in some different players, and I think Obika has made a big difference. I know he was playing a bit under Hamill to begin with as well, but he's just allows them to lengthen the game a lot. He allows them to have someone who just constantly bothers defenders, whereas Van Veen does it in bits and stuff
when he feels like
that's
not even a real criticism of Van Veen, that's just how he is. There was a real theme of the game was both Van Veen and Obika taking turns and drifting out to Hart's right hand side, and then them just playing long diagonals. They got a lot of joy for that. But I mean, he's brought back Cornelius in who put in a really,
a lot of work.
You're talking about attitude. It was a performance that was full of attitude. They've not tons of quality, but he looked like he was really difficult. He was in everyone's face. And then with Casey and Butcher, they seem to have, in these two games anyway, really helped shore up Butcher. Like, I was really had my doubts about putting him in in the back three, not because he's not a capable defender. It's just his style's aggressive. I would always feel that he would be wanting to go and put fires out, and that's because that's what he's done his whole career. And he showed quite a lot of discipline playing in the middle of a back three, and he showed a lot of leadership, which I wasn't certain that was going to be the case. And I think in case he's looked like a decent pickup, and Furlong over on the left had a decent game. So I mean, overall, it was a really, really impressive performance from Motherwell. But to move on,
suggest is it's been one very good performance though, because I think they were probably quite lucky to beat St Mirren. Like they got a bit of the rub of the green. They played well. They played better than they had before. But I think it's this like immediate rush to do things off the back of a game against their Hearts team that didn't play particularly well, who haven't been playing particularly well for weeks, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And yeah, fair enough. If they come in, Thomas over next weekend, that's when I would say you start going, right, maybe as the guy. But I think that's the one caveat I'll put on it.
He can buy them time as well. He can take them away from relegation, and they can have a real think about who they want. It might even improve the caliber of manager that wants to come to Motherwell, because they're not going to be I'll come in, I'll get to know these players, and I can look into what I'm going to improve for next season, knowing that I'm not going to manage there's a chance I can manage the Scottish Championship and have a relegation against my name. But we'll move on to Hearts, Ewan. I mean, what was the most disappointing sections of the performance for you?
It was just a whole big bag of nothing. They never really looked like scored at any point in the game. They just sort of let the game happen to them. The second goal was, I don't think I've ever seen a goal like that before. That was a really odd goal where someone plays like a 1-2 with themselves off the post with like a backwards header. The defending from Hearts was horrendous. And I mean,
that's 15 seconds in the second half as well.
Yeah. I mean, Kingsley was off. If Spittle had somehow managed to miss the chance, or it hadn't fallen right back to him, so they're possibly a wee bit lucky in that respect. Defensively poor, middle of the park, nothing really happening. Made subs that didn't change the game. Like Cool again, just seems to be
in the
wrong movie. Yeah, he's an 18-year-old shite bag.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't mean, he may not always be a shite bag, but as it stands just now, he does not look like he wants to be involved in the game. He looks like he maybe wants the ball, but he doesn't want the battle. You saw it because he came straight on the park and basically got bodied off the ball on the touchline minutes, seconds after coming on, and he stayed down, and you thought, it doesn't matter if you're... No, it's sounding like your dad, but it doesn't matter if you've had a wee bit of a knock there. You can't stay down when you've just come on the park and your team's getting beat 2-0. Like, that's not what people want to see.
These things, I mean, you're talking about your dad, but it's true. I mean, even I don't think that way, but see, during the 90 minutes, I fucking do. I don't look back on it like that. But when I'm in the stadium, it does irk you at the time, and you start wanting people. We all do revert to our tribalism when we're in there, and these things do matter, especially for a young player like that that's come in with maybe been heralded too much. As much as a Hibs fan who's quite happy to see how this is playing out can feel sorry for him, if you're like looking at him as a young footballer, there was far too much put on his shoulders. And if you're wondering, for a Patreon, we're going to be doing snap judgments on January signings, and I think you might be hearing this boy's name again if you come over to Patreon, because I'm on it. So if you're up for it for there, but and that's quite telling for the Hearts. I mean, it just looked like they didn't have, like Shankland got lost out on the right. He had one great chance. Snodgrass wasn't able to get on the ball anywhere near as much. Like Cornelius really took that upon himself to sort of get in his face. They seem to be getting a lot of touches on the ball. Like Snodgrass is getting on the ball, but he wasn't able to have any sort of influence on the game. The back three were all getting on the ball, but none of them were able to get involved in it. And I thought Humphreys got completely swallowed up by the back three, which was unusual, because this was a big game for Humphreys, because his form's been really good recently, mostly coming off the bench, and this was an opportunity for him to really stake a claim as being like the main man going forward.
Yeah, I just nothing really worked. I mean, I thought Cochrane, I'm a big fan of, he had a shocker of a game. Culminating in thinking he was getting subbed when he wasn't, and presumably that was just because he thought, I'm having a shocker here, so it must be me coming off.
But,
but it wasn't. It was just that. I mean, a very oddly sort of flat performance given. Obviously, the Hearts haven't been playing fantastic in recent weeks, but they are still generally getting decent results, and that was a real sort of shock to the system.
And Billy Mackay's performance, which I know has been a huge topic of discussion between Hearts fans, but he was real bad, had no impact on the game whatsoever. He was losing the ball pretty much every time he got on it, and he stayed on the pitch for large periods. And I know that's starting to become a bugbear for Hearts fans, and obviously now the knives, as always happens after one defeat, the knives come out for Nielsen, and it's always the same. It's just like maybe it's the same at every big club. They're always ready to shoot themselves in the face. Every defeat means that someone has to get sacked.
It's not just big clubs. There's like I'm noticing it like with my own club as well. There's a complete lack of
context or perspective.
It's like I've seen people going on about, oh, when are we ever going to win a game again? Like having won the week before and stuff like that. And you're like, hey, I mean, I know it wasn't a league game, but you only have to go back another like week and a half for that. Like The Hearts performance was woeful, but Hearts have not had this level of consistency pretty much in my lifetime of being this good for two consecutive seasons. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can probably say maybe they can do better, but if Hearts finish third again and if they get that European money again, for the first time in my life, I feel like they have a manager and a structure off the park where there are flaws with it, but they'll actually use it somewhat wisely. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, yeah, you're not talking about, and people get carried away. Like, I think Nielsen's flawed. I don't think he's the perfect manager, but there's nothing he's done this season where you'd be like, oh, you need to get that guy out, because he's clearly doing something well. Mm.
But that had repercussions at both ends of the table. And then that looks at the game that me and you were at, Craig. Hibs 2-0 victory against Kilmarnock is now sort of put a lot of fear into the Kilmarnock. I'd say a lot of fear into the Kilmarnock support after watching that game on Sunday. And then sort of like the Hibs fans getting to maybe get some feel, the feels in their stomach that maybe everyone else is going to look stupid for once and everyone's slagging off Hibs. The recruitment, the manager, maybe they'll all end up with egg on their face. Will they, Craig?
It's hard to tell because I was very impressed with Hibs on Saturday. Their energy, Killer a bit of a slow team, that's not really a surprise. So it was a bit of a mismatch in that respect. It's probably not the type of performance that Killer wanted to play against, because just Hibs ran over the top of us, but Hibs broke so quickly. There was legs all over the pitch. I don't think this Kelly team could have levelled at them that they're not working hard, they're not trying, all the rest of it. They were just so slow compared to Hibs. Yeah. Like, and that's just because they're slow. It's not because they weren't. But it was like so sluggish in Hibs. The energy that likes a Campbell. Ewan does a lot of running. He would frustrate the life out of you. My God.
The man, yeah, wild performance.
He does not pass the ball. Like, yeah. And I know he had that, the one that got cleared off the line where he somehow like managed to keep it and turn people inside out. But there was a sense of like pure luck to that. Like,
I was laughing in the stands at a lot of what Ewan was doing over there. He's a real enigma. I mean, the style, everything about him, the way he treats social media after defeats and stuff like that, he really is. I think, and then this idea that he doesn't pass, but he's also like one of the top assists in the league. He's a player that is increasingly hard to pin down.
But he was a real danger in the wide areas. Hibs were strong as well, and the fullbacks probably were the weakest part of the performance for Hibs. But still, there weren't any flaws, and they're a bit more solid in the middle of the park now. But Campbell's the one that just stands out. I know that. I think you and I, Tony, were probably the only two people still quite positive about him earlier in the season in terms of not because he's a particularly good footballer, because I don't think he is. But his energy levels are incredible, and he's got a very adept skill of always been in the right place at the right mm-hmm. time, when, especially in an attacking sense, and the amount of times he pinches wee balls and he gets into these positions to shoot. I think there's a player there, and I think if they can, it's a rough diamond. I think if Johnson can, he's probably got the right manager, because Johnson's all about that high energy stuff. And, mm-hmm. and Johnson, I mean, that's the type of player Johnson was himself. Like, he only played briefly for us, but he buzzed about and he was quite a clever player. And if he can just get a wee bit more refinement to his game, I don't know if that's possible, then I do. I think he could play for Scotland. I think he's good.
Wow, there we go. I think in terms of refinement, you saw possibly the most refined performance from Josh Campbell this season. He had a lot more to his game than just his physicals and his mentality, and like you're saying, his ability to get in around. There was actually loads of chunks of quality in him. He was playing loads of little one-touch passes that were all coming off balls around the corner. I couldn't believe my eyes. It was like he looked like a guy who'd just been handed a contract with the first time when he was being paid like a first team Scottish Premiership football, because he signed a 4-year deal at Hibs, probably in what some people would say quite desperate fashion for him, but by all accounts he was getting paid buttons, like really, and offered a big 4-year deal. He took that because he really wanted the opportunity to come through at a club like Hibs and not have to drop down the leagues, and it's really fucking paid off for him now. And Sean Maloney trying to bring him down to Wigan's been a masterstroke for him, because he's now been able to renegotiate a contract that might not have been necessarily on the table without that, because Hibs would probably be quite happy to be paying someone like in the hundreds of pounds a week who's actually a first team player and scores quite a lot of goals. But I thought his performance was tremendous. And as I said, he's had other good performances this season, but this was the one that seemed the most rounded, and that was even without coming with a goal.
But caveat that against the midfield he was playing against.
I was about to say that there is obviously, I think I'm on record of saying what I think about this Kilmarnock team, especially compared to previous. But you can see what, like Jimmy Jago is another player. I find him hilarious, because he is so good at, like, positional sense is good. He really steps in when Fish was driving with the ball and Fish was making these really, really good raking passes, and Jago cuts a lot out and he gets in people's faces. He's the archetype defensive midfielder, but his technique is, like, obscenely bad. Like, obscenely bad at passing. He keeps it simple, but even when he does, you see the ball, when he makes the 7-yard pass, it trundles along the, so like it never ever looks convincing. He's made a huge impact, Jago. There's no getting away from it.
I love players like that who are, like we talked about Yuan as well, who just are like so good at some things, and then like the rest of the genuine, like you would be in there. But I thought it was quite funny in terms of like the highlights and stuff, that I think if you watch the highlights you would probably have almost got the impression it was a fairly even game, and it was nothing could be further from the truth. Kelly, in fairness, created a not insubstantial amount of chances in for a game that we were never in.
Especially after the second goal, I was getting a bit touchy because I was shouting, because I was like, Hibs kept on playing the way they were, and I was like, no, absolutely take the sting out of this for 5 minutes. Don't let Kelly get their tails up. But Kelly could have scored had a couple of opportunities right after that, and then, in my opinion, VAR ruined the game. And I think you got that impression from everyone in the stadium. The Hibs fans booing.
Yeah. Did that actually happen? I saw someone say that on Twitter.
Yeah, the game was...
Was that its most exciting in terms of end-to-end during that period?
Like, don't get me wrong, Hibs were always winning that game. I had no doubt in my mind. There was no way we were getting anything out of that game, but it was at least... And it went flat because Hibs just started knocking the ball about as well, and it just completely killed it. And don't want to dwell on it too long. I just don't think that's why VAR exists. I can understand the argument why someone might say they think it's a red card, but no one in the stadium thought it was a red card. Cabrera's not looking for a red card.
No.
You could see the Hibs players when Vissel went off, or kind of gave him a wee pat on the head and all the rest of it. His foot's high, but I thought the sports scene commentators did a good job of describing it, which is that Vissel's trying to bring a ball out of there. He doesn't see Cabrera, and Cabrera's the one who kind of appears
quite brave.
On the blind side of him. And once Vassell sees him, he does pull out of the challenge. You can very noticeably see that. Now, there's an argument, but I think this is where VAR that referee's not in the stadium, and he's not got the same sense of the game that people, the referee who was 5 yards away and gave the decision, does. And that's the thing. I can understand that being an advantage sometimes. Sometimes you want a referee who's like not caught up in the moment. Yeah. But there wasn't a moment to be caught up in that game. Like, there was no, Cabrera and Armstrong were having a wee bit of beef, but that was just kind of low-level stuff. And then it just wasn't, to me, it wasn't a red card. I don't think the appeal will be successful, but it depends who's involved. But it just was weird for me. But nonetheless, I don't want that to come across as like sour.
No, I totally agree. As I said, the game was, that was the only period in the game that it really went into.
Vassell's fucking terrible anyway, so I don't think, he is not a player.
Nah, he's not. And just before we move on, obviously for Hibs, that's them going 5 points behind in third. They go away to Livingston, which who've got a game in hand on Hibs, but that's now a massive game, even if you take away the context of third, just the context of fourth, which is a decent European place in that. So that's a massive game going forward. Hibs are looking like they've clicked in various, like the way Craig's talking about the way that they're playing. There was a lot of fluidity in it. They've now got Nisbet and Kurajevic coming back, so they're going to have. And then Matthew Hoppe came off the bench, somehow got man of the match in the stadium. That was a joke. He did, but he managed to get a goal, which is really big for his confidence coming to a new club. So they've got huge amounts of attacking options. They look like they've got the correct balance in midfield. It feels like the January transfers were all done sensibly after, like, ones that you're like, yeah, maybe Jimmy Jago isn't the best player, but right now that is the player that we need to come into that team, into that position. And Will Fish has really, really grown at the role with Porteous leaving. So you start to look at, I would be shocked if Hibs didn't finish in the top five now. And hopefully once we get past these Old Firm games, if we're still in with a run before the split with those four games, hopefully we can be going at the split with Hibs maybe being, even if they were still 5 points behind going into the split, there's something to be had there. But Hibs are playing Hearts twice in the last six games. So if they can be in with a shout at that point, at least we could have a proper race for it. To the end, fingers crossed, I'm going on my fucking holidays.
The last thing from a Kelly point of view, I was just talking about that, is like that midfield, like, it was Alston and Lyons is obviously not who you want to start. But at the same time, I saw people saying like, oh, how on earth could they possibly start those two? And it's like, well no, they both played. That was the midfield last week that won an away game for the first time. And like, so I could kind of think, right, well, maybe that's like for that type of game, just the grit, all of that. It didn't work, and I probably wouldn't have picked it myself, but I didn't mind it either. And so I just feel it's like that. It's that like short memories, and yeah, I understand people being critical of the manager. I think he is not doing a very good job, but at the same time, I think the squad is so bad that I don't think anyone else would be doing a better job either. So it's like, what's the point? Just get to the end of the
season. Just try and get through it. I agree. You're at that point now where I think the fans, you just have to get behind it. You're in the dirt. It's never going to change for that. It's going to go to the end of the season. You've got a poor team, and it's just try and all get together and see if you can make anything happen.
There's three winnable home games plus Celtic, I think, before the split. Hopefully win at least two of those, and there's a St Mirren away game which is on their like top six bottling day, like game match day 33, their traditional time honoured.
Get the flares out, we know what's coming.
That's our biggest chance of an away win, and I personally think we will be finishing 10th, and I'll take it, but it's probably this Motherwell game at the weekend's an absolutely huge one, because that's our biggest chance of a
overhauling someone
in the next wee while and getting level with them, and potentially the two of us end up a wee bit detached from the other two. But I don't know. I did not enjoy the game, I will tell you that much. £26, and my highlight was going to the Mexican in the St James Centre for my lunch before the game.
Which one? What was that called?
Tortilla. I've never seen it before. Yeah, it was quite nice. It was good. They had a vegan chili. It was good.
The Vietnamese restaurant, Kapow, in the St James Centre is absolutely dynamite. I really like it.
One in the West End to Glasgow is very good.
I'm really impressed.
We should really get a sponsorship with them.
I wasn't impressed with Mark Birigitte, you in, so please talk to me. I've kept you quiet there for 15 minutes so you can have the fun bit here. Dundee United 1, St Johnstone 2, take it away.
Wow. Wow. I think Joel said last week that the thing with Mark Berghetti is he's not even done the United's worst problem. But he is, though.
To beg
he absolutely is. Like, I mean, Dundee United are not good. They've got a manager who's way out of his depth, and it's baffling that he's got the job. You know, the defence is all over the place. The midfield's powder puff. They've only got one striker. They hardly have they don't have any forward options. Their best winger's injured. Yes, they have all those issues. However, they have got the worst goalkeeper in the last 10 years, maybe, in the Scottish Premiership.
And Joel Pereira being the only one that could maybe.
But was he making mistakes as bad as that?
He's even worse than like the ones that took us down, like Colin Doyle. Like, Colin Doyle had some good games.
Yeah.
Berghetti hasn't. I mean, obviously, there's the second goal, which is hilarious. But the first one, for fuck's sake. I mean, that it's see, on the, not to get into the weeds of the XG, right? But as a chance, before May hits that, the chance is look, the ones I've looked at is 0.08. Your chance that's a goal, so 8% chance that becomes a goal. So not a good chance. After he set it, where it goes in the goal, it actually goes down to 5%. Because it's right in the middle of the goal, and it's not going that fast. And it's because Berghetti's just standing way over to the wrong side. And he's not a good enough goalkeeper. Some goalkeepers that sort of maybe their positioning isn't that great, but their reflexes are amazing. No, that's not the case with Mark Berghetti at all. So he really needs to be standing exactly where the shot is going to hit him. Otherwise, he's not saving it. And it just goes. It goes. It's just bizarre that the way he doesn't move his feet quick enough, doesn't get into the middle of the goal, and he does sort of more or less get there, and then but it goes through. Then I mean the second goal. I mean, for fuck's sake, that is so. So poor, and it's not like he's come from. Yeah, I remember Morelos scored a goal up at Ross County. I think it was Scott Fox was in goals, and Morelos sort of snuck around the side of him, like he hadn't seen him. And Fox thinks he's got ages to kick the ball out of the park. Doesn't see Morelos. Morelos nips around, tackles him, and scores. Stevie May's right in front of him. Stevie May is running full pelt right at him. How much time did Berghetti think he had?
I saw someone being critical of Mulgrew, and I couldn't quite understand because Berghetti passes the ball to Mulgrew under pressure of two players. You see, as soon as he passes the ball, two of them converge on Mulgrew. So he's obviously just going to give you it back.
There was on the BBC, they said that Mulgrew has the talent to open his body up, and he's not got his body shape right for that moment. There is maybe something fair in that, but sometimes Mulgrew cannot be blamed for what happens there. Like, even if he could have possibly, and you begin predicting that he could have maybe carried the ball out and got a pass, but he would have to be taking a risk that he probably doesn't want to do. If his body shape's poor, you don't give him the ball either. Yeah. You can see, the beauty for being the goalkeeper is you can see fucking everything in front of you.
Yeah. And even if he's not expecting the ball back from Mulgrew, he has plenty of time to just put it out of the park. You've just equalised. Just do not concede a goal.
He's still nowhere near kicking it by the time he gets tackled. He's not even in the process of kicking it yet. He's bad every single part of goalkeeping, though. The mistake's real that someone put up. It's every type of mistake that you can get from a goalkeeper. Uh-huh. And he's now, with the Stevie May one there, he's hit the apex. He's finally completed the whole set. And this is where he just breaks free. That's like, he never. It's like he's got a bad spirit inside him, but now he's free.
And then obviously, I mean, not to cast aspersions, but he was at it by pretending to be injured. I mean, no chance. He was staying down in the hope that VAR somehow ruled that as like a foul, and he just decided, I'm just staying down. I'm just going off here. It was
everyone's saying fair play to Stevie May and like that. He only fucking done it because of who it is. That has worked against him there. If that's any other goalkeeper, he probably doesn't bother his arse. But he sees it's like, oh, I fuck back to him. Fucking hell, I'm getting my skates right on now.
Yeah, yep. And the fact that not saying that there has to be. I think I said this last week. There has to be an unattached goalkeeper that is better than Mark Berghetti available.
Joel.
Anybody, I'll do it. You just have to sign somebody. you cannot have him. I mean, he will get them relegated. Like 100%, he will get Dundee United relegated unless he's replaced.
And the other guy, Newman, he played a bit for Peterhead, was it?
Yeah. He really had a comedy
against Aberdeen, possibly.
That was quite the introduction to the top flight from him when he just chipped the ball straight into the no man's land straight to St Johnstone players. He did at least make the save. Berigetti would probably let that in, but
The players are so much the end of their tether after that. You see the hands going up and they're all like, I'm sure they try and be sound to them in the dressing room and at training that, but it must be like someone, surely when you've got the personalities of like Fletcher, Jume, Mulgrew, like Levitt, you know, there's some big personalities in there and surely someone's finally fucking snapped.
Imagine being like Charlie Mulgrew and you've spent like your career playing with like Fraser Foster and Craig Gordon and all these guys like behind you, and then you've got that.
You feel like you're bullying them and you feel like you're really punching down, but like it's because Dundee United have entertained it for so long. They've just take him out. They take that man out the firing line. He had to take himself out the firing line to finally to be given a rest and to be taken out of this scenario that he doesn't want to be in. Let that man get back to bloody Sydney and get his feet up. I mean, it almost feels like pointless talking about any other part of the game.
Yeah.
St. Johnstone, I thought, that's them safe. That's them safe. Mm. Fair play to them. They disappointed me in the sense that they had their foot on Dundee United's throat once they scored. And as the true St. Johnstone recently fashioned, they didn't capitalise. Mm. And they were lucky they didn't end up dropping points out of it. They just need to play that they're a better team you actually see it when they do try and play with the handbrake off a wee bit. They're actually all right.
They're not quite as rigid as...
Yeah. And Stevie May, he's had a very good season, finally kind of scoring some goals and all the rest of it. And they've got players there that, this team is very much a... When they play, they can damage teams. They might struggle occasionally, but it's just... They just annoy me. Matthews has had a good season. I thought he was pretty badly at fault for that goal. To be honest, I thought his positioning wasn't good.
Yeah,
you shouldn't let that in my opinion. But they won't care. That's them safe. And
the amount of iterations of St Johnstone we've had, especially in midfield, it's I've seen so many different lineups in there. But I feel now when you look at it with the options of like. Carey, I know Witherspoon's certainly not been in there. They've got Hallberg, McPherson, obviously Phillips being like who's been like a sort of really, really good sign. I know he was, he's been superb. And they've got Ali Crawford in there as well. They've got so many options in there now that they don't have to play in a rigid fashion. They've got players, they can make a balanced midfielder with that. So there's no real excuse or reason, which I felt there was, for a period in the season with injuries, that you understood why they played that way, but that's all gone now. They've actually got what looks like a pretty, now that a lot of them are fit, it's a meaty squad with like balance with lots of different styles of players, so they don't have to play in the Yon Davidson way.
No, just Clark and me together. Always looks good to me.
Just do it.
I keep on banging on about that as well, but it seems to work. Do it every game.
Single time.
Stop fucking about with that. Stop trying to make Theo Bear a thing and Zach Rudden. They're rubbish. Play both of them. Stevie B's having a good season, and you actually did. For all Berigetti, he was laughable at both. He took both his goals pretty well, I would say. Me and he kicked the first one.
It's a good volley. It's controlled and it's decent. There's pace on it.
Yeah, and then the second one is actually a cracking tackle. It was right on the ball. So fair play.
What we say with that first goal is I don't know who's is it Liam Smith who's meant to be picking up. It's the worst marking you'll ever see as well.
He looks at him and then thinks, "No, that'll be fine," and then doesn't get any closer to him. Just hopeless.
And you're thinking, do you think Asghar will bullet Liam Fox at any time, or
nope?
Jink, this is just Dundee United right till the end.
If he does, it won't be. They'll just be like Charlie Mulgrew. They're not. I think. I think
we want that.
I think they've
that
just.
Sounds good.
I think we've just basically given up on doing anything and just hoping for the best. I think there's just a, I just get the vibe of Dundee United of like nothing happening. Like
disconnect like, between every part of the club.
See with Kelly, like we didn't sign any or definitely didn't do the business we wanted to do, but McInnes had his interview and he was very much like, you know, we tried to sign quite a lot of players on deadline day, they all fell through. The board said similar, like that's probably true. For Dundee United, it didn't even really seem like they were trying to do very much. They just got rid of half their squad. Thought, we'll just go with one goalkeeper and one striker, it will probably be fine.
We'll go with one goalkeeper who is like beyond the pale.
It might work for them because they wouldn't actually need to do very much to stay up anyway. But it's very odd, the situation there, is what I will say.
Right, let's move on. We've got Ewan Taylor here, so why don't we talk about the Rangers and their 3-0 victory at Livingston Football Club. And that's Livy now, I think, been humped 3-0 three times in a row off a very huge range of styles of clubs in Scotland. But, what was the highlights of the performance from your angle, Ewan?
Lovely free kick from Hall of Famer James Tavernier. Would be the pick of the goal, certainly. It wasn't an amazing performance, but it was pretty comfortable over the piece. I didn't think there was it. I mean, the penalty is one of those where people describe it as soft, and what they actually mean is stupid from the defender.
Sometimes it doesn't get given. Really, really clearly a penalty.
Yes. Yeah. It was a clear penalty. What Ben Rice is playing at there, I'm not entirely sure. I don't think there's any question that it should have been given. That sort of, I suppose, is a good use of VAR when the referee just missed that. And to be fair to him, why would he be looking at it? Because it wasn't really that close to the ball. So I can understand the referee not seeing it. Going ahead, Livy had a couple of decent jobs. Penrice actually, just after doing that, missed a bit of a sitter. He had a poor sort of 5-minute spell there. And Stephen Kelly had a decent, decent chance on the volley as well. But other than that, I thought Livingston didn't really cause Rangers many problems. Game goes on, and of the refereeing decisions, I think the red card was a little bit on the harsh side. Both bookings, I thought the first booking was pretty harsh, and the second one, Omeonga just sort of gets done a wee bit because the ref sees him sort of steaming in. I think just sort of is happy to take the contact, and then then that second yellow. So I thought that was a wee bit harsh, but then. Tav steps up and puts the free kick in the top corner. So it's game over at that stage. Probably the best thing from a Rangers perspective was Raskan, his performance. Mm-hmm. He was man of the match.
Exactly where I was going to come to you. Can you describe to us who maybe not had the chance to see him, like what type of player is? Because from what I've seen, he played quite deep.
Yeah.
But obviously I saw that you went with a midfield three, which slightly different than what he would normally go for, because I don't think of Raskin as a defensive midfielder per se. Mm. So it was Raskin, Campbell and Kamara, which is a slight pivot away from what he would normally do in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, unintended, by the way, that he normally plays a double pivot. Just to clarify, everyone.
Very good, very good. There's a bit of debate about where Raskin will end up playing. I think that's the sort of role I think I long term I would like to see him. I would like to see him be the deepest midfielder because he moves the ball really quickly, and that's something that we've really struggled with. Basically since Stephen Davis was good, which is probably at least 18 months ago now. Yeah, we've not had someone able to do that, and I think that's probably more important than maybe his defensive attributes a lot of the time. It looks to me like his defensive attributes are actually really, really good. So he can play as it's been described that he can play as a 6 or an 8. But he doesn't score that many goals. I don't think he'll ever be that kind of attacking midfielder. He can be sort of adept in terms of setting up goals, and he's got good quick feet. He just seems like an all round good centre mid. Really, I think he won the ball 18 times.
All right. That'll be really, really important looking at the League Cup final. Because obviously Celtic do and I don't mean this negative whatsoever. They commit men, overly commit, and they also don't play with a defensive midfielder per se, and the fullbacks obviously come inside all the time. So Rangers having a central midfielder who plays with his head up and is willing to play quick could really take advantage of the holes. And like you're saying, is something that maybe Rangers have lacked.
Yeah.
Under Van Bronckhorst in general this season.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a big weakness for a while, the centre of the park, really. And guys like Lundstrom and Jack can be okay out of possession. I mean, they probably, as a pair, have had their best games in the Europa League run last season. But those, we don't really have games like that too often domestically, so we needed something else, and Raskin looks like he could do that. I mean, he's actually really good at second balls, getting onto second balls, which I think is a really useful skill in Scottish football. Yeah, it is, yeah. Because and it's not criticising the other teams in Scotland, but when they do try to attack, probably Rangers and Celtic, they do tend to go direct and they put the ball in place places that neither team sort of wants it, and the ball will go loose, and having a midfielder that can sort of snap into winning those balls is really useful. So yeah, decent performance all round. Bit concerned about Tillman being injured. That would be obviously not injured in the game, but missed the game and might be out of next week, which that would be a big blow because he is our best player. So we will have to see if he's out. Hopefully it was a bit of precaution, but we shall see.
I mean, it's Beale seems to be getting into, I'm not going to go into too much, we've not got all day here, but Beale certainly seems to like playing mind games. He certainly likes to be involved with the media. He certainly likes to manage through the media. So he's gone for the Craig Levine 101 of claiming that he's got tons of players injured. I've got a feeling that Mark Tillman is going to be a-okay in that game next week. But we'll finish that there. Let's go to the other side. The other side of the Old Firm for Celtic. They ran out 4-0 winners. A bit of a procession, Craig, against Aberdeen, who sort of like the way that their fans were talking for what I read, weren't they too happy with the fact that Robson sort of kind of just wrote it all off? I don't think that's really unfair for Robson.
Well, it's just like Celtic have not always, they've had bad games at Celtic Park this season. They've had occasions where they've kind of stumbled past teams. Ross County, they only narrowly beat Dundee United, they only narrowly beat, who are much worse teams than Aberdeen. So I think it's hard to tell, because I always think it's a bit like, well, Aberdeen conceded a goal after 2 minutes. Like, as soon as you do that, you're fucked. Like, there's no... I would like to look at it. I mean, if you're, no one else is going to know them if I haven't looked them up, but the stats for when conceding in, like, the first 5 minutes at Celtic Park, I cannot imagine many teams ever get anything after doing so. So I always think it's, like, hard to then judge what Robson's game plan actually was from that point on, but they weren't in the game. They didn't participate in the game.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper, that's bad goalkeeping for at least two goals, in my opinion. The first one and I think it was the third one.
But he gave him Ajax, and I thought that meant he was amazing.
Yeah, well, they even gave him a contract and tweeted about him. But nonetheless, apparently that doesn't automatically qualify you as good. But at the same time, it's like, I always just find these games hard to analyse. Like, they conceded an early goal, it was a mistake. It was a good finish from McGregor. Like, he took it nicely, got himself in the position, all the rest of it. And then from that point on, you're in that stick and twist situation. And Celtic, if you even make half an attempt to score a goal, they're eventually going to pick you off in those situations. And that's what we saw. And they've got this array of players, because you see like Haksabanovic appearing. Forrest is even coming off the bench. Like, and I know he's maybe not the player he was, but you just look at that. Kyogo was on the bench. Like, you just look at the depth that exists there. And yeah, it's like there's no... You basically to beat Celtic, it's nothing to do with what you do, or it's 90% not to do with what you do, and it's just if they don't turn up, and they did turn up in this game, and that meant Aberdeen lost. And
I mean, yeah, because we could just spend time. We could just spend another podcast talking about how good Rio Tati is, and I mean, he scored two lovely goals, and I think all round he's the most rounded and best player here. I think that's pretty much agreed upon the whole podcast, which is unusual, I think, for us. But he's just amazing to watch. I just, yeah, and oh, I suppose he's got made his first start in the league, and he looked I think the analysis of him that Sports Scene done, I thought, was pretty good in terms of showing like what type he is, and he did look like he was trying constantly to feel up the defender and to play in between the two of them for the slide rule passes that Celtic play. So it looked like his style of, which isn't always the case with Celtic strikers. Sometimes you're again, I don't see how that's going to work, especially when Celtic and Rangers sign the pace merchants to go over the top. You're always like, I've got my doubts about them. They're pretty much always going to end up as wingers at Rangers and Celtic. But this one, the way his movement was, and the way he was wanting to play, looked like would suit this Celtic team against the teams that he plays most weeks. So there looks like there was some thought put into that signing. I don't know, Ewan, is there anything you want to say? I can't even be arsed talking about Aberdeen.
Well, yeah, I mean, just another pathetic display from Aberdeen, I guess.
5-0, 6-0 and 4-0.
Yeah, I mean,
in the last batch of away games.
Yeah, I mean, so their combined XG for the last two games against Celtic is 0.33. So at that rate, they should score a goal against Celtic every six games. They did have a shot. I mean, that's two games in a row without a shot on target. They did, on this occasion, have a shot inside the box, at least, which they didn't manage at Pittodrie in the last game. I mean, that's I'm a bit perplexed by... I mean, I think it maybe makes more sense, actually, now, to be fair, but the news about Dave Cormack's health issues, which are a shame now that that's come through, it maybe makes a bit more sense that Aberdeen haven't been a bit quicker on the in terms of making an appointment, because I haven't seen anything from Robson to suggest he's going to be the guy, even in the medium term. So
the top six in Europe, like, there for them, they could definitely finish like fourth or fifth. Still, third probably just beyond them. But
And they just seem to be. And to some extent, I think it's like they're caught between two stools, because I sort of thought in the January window, is there any point in bringing in really short term guys like Pollock, McDonald, the boy Markandy, I think they've got the winger from Blackburn, who's not really been seen yet. You're really short, even to some extent, Shinny will be. I think Shinny will probably end up staying longer term. But they made a lot of short term signings without a manager in place. And I thought, well, what's the point in doing that if you're sort of writing this season off? Because you're either trying to get like short term results and trying to get into Europe, and then that you know, increases your chance of having a good season next year, or you're actually building towards the future now. Because I've got that this boy Mislovic that they signed was meant to be good. He's not playing, and like Clarkson's definitely not staying. Yeah, Clarkson's definitely not staying beyond the end of the season, and he's playing all the time. And Robson's actually spoken about how he's a big part of what they want to do. What's the point in that? Your defense is, you know, two of your back three, you know, aren't going to be there, you know, beyond the end of the season probably. It's just, it seems a bit, and your Gorter as well probably won't stay, though. It doesn't look like that'd be much of a loss. So yeah, it just seems a bit odd to me that because they had the week off because they got knocked out of the cup by sixth year Darvel. So they had a break. And they had a fortnight where they could have made an appointment, and you'd actually, you know, they could have had a decent amount of time on the training pitch, and they've just, there was not even any, you know, any murmurings that they were anywhere close to making an appointment.
If they could fucking loan a manager, I'm sure they'd fucking do that.
Yes,
now.
Exactly. But
worrying times for Aberdeen that just don't really seem to be dissipating regardless of what they do. St Mirren have bounced back from their first home defeat from the opening day of the season to a resurgent Hibernian Football Club, and they managed to go out 1-0 winners in a hard-fought win against Ross County, where Curtis Main and Tony Watt started leading the line. Is that something you see working well, Craig Anderson? I mean, and you're a man who's I think who's seen Tony Watt up close.
Well, yeah, I have. Not playing for my own club, but
not yet. The only ones you haven't played for.
Yeah. But yes.
Maybe be the only three clubs he hasn't played for.
No, I don't think Tony Watt is a good fit for this St Mirren squad. I don't think it will work ultimately, the two of them. I think Main is exactly what Robinson wants and needs, and I think Watt will play some games. He'll be not a terrible signing in the sense that, like, if they loaned out Brophy and bring in Watt, they're not losing out on doing that. In fact, it meant that they were playing against a team who couldn't pick their first choice striker this week, which must be rare for St Mirren not to be able to play against someone, not have someone play against them who's out on loan. But they played all right, and they definitely deserve to win the game, St Mirren. But they must be a wee bit worried, I think, that they should be... They're clearly vastly better than Ross County, and yet... It was ropier than it probably should have been. That would be the concern for me. But they played pretty well, well enough to win the game, is probably how I would phrase it. And they had, I mean, that big stramash, they had several chances to extend the lead. I'm starting to get a repeat of last season vibes off them, that they're somehow going to finish seventh. But it would be a bit of a shame, because I think, like, this is the first time in a season where I've thought St Mirren, like, are genuinely a pretty good team. I think some of the other teams have kind of been battling and scraping and, you know, been getting results, and you've thought, yeah, they're doing all right. This year, they actually, I've been really impressed every time, or most times I've seen them. But to me, the wheels are just coming off ever so slightly. Maybe that's a bit harsh, considering they did win this game despite missing a few players, but it feels like they've lost a wee bit of momentum in general, and it'll be interesting to see for the rest of the season. But they crucially got the win against Ross County, which is all that I'm bothered about. And County haven't been playing very well recently. Like they got the wee boost from bringing in all the two strikers, but that was very short term. And they got the boost against an abject Kilmarnock away from home. Apart from that, they've not really been doing much. I think they've still got a lot to worry about.
Yeah. Look at the fixtures here. I mean, they've got St Johnston, Celtic, Dundee United, Livingston, Hearts and Rangers. So it's a real, real mixed bag in there. And you would think that, like you're saying, if there's any slip-ups outside the three obvious ones there, they might be in trouble. But who knows? Who knows if their team's good enough to take advantage in this middle pack? I mean, it's always just impossible to know. But Ewan, I mean, let's finish on Ross County. I mean, Craig touched on it there, that they quietly were going about. They brought in some new blood up front, and they did pick up some points there. But that's quite a few. Are they just going to get? I feel like it's them or Kilmarnock now, and I've got this feeling that Dundee United are kind of doomed, just because there's too many of the problems that you can have as a football team at Dundee United, both on and off the park. So I'm kind of resigned to them. So I'm feeling like it might be Ross County or Kilmarnock, because Motherwell picking up 6 points in a week there just means they probably only need another couple of wins.
Yeah. I think so. I thought that Ross County probably had the best transfer window of all the teams down the bottom of the league. But Simon Murray, obviously Brophy couldn't play at the weekend because it was against St Mirren, which meant Simon Murray started, didn't really do anything. I thought it was a bit worrying that, you know, Malky Mackay afterwards, we started slowly and, you know, and that's not like us. It's like, isn't it? Like, you know, you are one of the worst teams in the league. He sort of acted as if he was, like, surprised that they'd played quite badly. It's like, well, you do that most weeks, mate. I mean, the red card really... I mean,
what a laugh that was.
Fucking hell.
Why is the referee not just given that? I mean, he's got the perfect view of it.
That was wild. Again, Malky Mackay was at the side of the pitch saying, "What for?" as he went off. I was like, yeah. Probably for the two-footed lunge, I think.
The two-footed rocket-like attack on the goalkeeper who's got the ball comfortably in his arm.
Yes, I think that's what it was for. So I always, like, I mean, I like Edwards as a player. I just think he's quite he just looks like he'll make something happen in a team like Ross County. You probably need to just carry someone like that. But it does. I mean, that's the second red of the season. So
played wide.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems strange.
Yeah, not that type of player, but maybe he is actually. So yeah, I mean, if he's out of the team now because the shape's changed a wee bit, and you know, it's like Danda playing behind two strikers, then I do wonder, because I think he is probably more talented than Murray and Brophy, but
you start to think as well, like when they play the 3-5-2, it's like the. Are the wing backs good enough cross of the ball to take advantage of the fact that your main striker's attributes are Jordan White's? Mm-hmm. You feel like you're maybe taking that away. I know that the idea is probably that they get Danda on the ball and he actually ends up being the one who plays maybe deep crosses from maybe around the edge of the box. And I mean, Danda does look like a player, and he's one of those players that the eye test and the stats test really does match up. And he is clearly, you think in a better team, he could have some really decent numbers in Scottish football. But yeah, it's like, I quite like the Lautori. I think I do like watching Lautori. I think he's a really handy player and he's one of those players that I think really suits our league. And I know he's quite young. And Noah Kenny, I know, has had some decent games from him. So the midfield, I see a balance. But at the same time, it's like if they don't have wide players who deliver crosses, it's like the main crux of the team. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Even if the midfield dominates, they might not really get anything from it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like he's tried to change things, in January, and the shape's changed a wee bit, and they've not quite worked out how it all works yet, but they're obviously running out of games. So yeah,
they got lucky against Hibs with the woeful VAR decision, and we'll just leave that there. And just to remind everyone again, the live show on the 10th of March, if you go on our Twitter, I imagine on our Facebook and stuff, there'll be the links for the tickets on the site. As I say, £25, that gets you entry, a pint, a pie, and you're giving money to a wonderful Scottish children's charity. So thank you very much for listening. I hope to see you there. Come over to the Patreon just now, and we're going to talk about snap judgments on January signings. Craig Anderson, thank you very much.
Thank you to all the listeners.
And Ewan Taylor, thank you as well.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Craig.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.